Yo, I'm Kavam.
Yo, I'm Rash.
And welcome to the Before Our Friends Die podcast on the Aki and Saltfish Digital Network. This is the platform where we have the conversations we want to have before we leave this planet.
With that in mind, let's go.
Let's go.
Hello and welcome to the Before Our Friends Die podcast. This is a very special episode featuring Don Mori, a mentor of mine actually, and he talks about his time being a chief commercial director of fresh food and commodities at Tesco. Rochelle and I had a really great conversation with him, but I just wanted to give you a quick warning before we kick off with the episode that unfortunately we couldn't get the audio to be where we wanted it to be and where it usually is on the Aki and Saltfish Digital Network, and that's because of technical difficulties. But nevertheless, it's certainly a listenable episode. We wouldn't share it if it wasn't. And we want you to know that there are some great messages throughout this episode. So please do turn up loud and enjoy the episode. Let us know what you think. As always, at Aki and Saltfish on Twitter and Instagram. At Before Our Friends Die on Instagram for the pod. And akiandsaltfish@gmail.com to get in touch with us. So without further ado, get stuck in. Cheers.
So, hello and welcome to the Before Our Friends Die podcast exclusively on the Aki and Saltfish Digital Network. You are joined by me, Kavan.
Myself, Rash.
And we've got an incredibly special guest here today with us. This guy has mentored me from, I want to say, October, November 2021, all the way through to the now in this 2022. So, Dom Mori, if you want to introduce yourself, who are you? What do you do? It's great to have you here.
Hi guys, I'm really pleased to be able to join you today, so thank you for having me. Yes, so my name's Don Mori. I'm the commercial director of fresh food for Tesco, and I've been lucky enough to have met and, in fairness, Kavan, I'll say mentored both ways around, you, me, and the other way around for the last sort of 6 months or so. So that's me, and delighted to come and join you on the podcast today and hear what questions you may have for me.
Brilliant. So let's get into your history then, Don. Now where are you from, and what's your background? What was your education like?
So I spent really most of my life from West London. So my mum's mum would have come over here I guess before the Second World War as an Irish immigrant into Hammersmith Shepherd's Bush, and my mum grew up that part of the world. So most of my time has come from West London, lived in and around in various parts over the years. In terms of education, I went to multiple schools, not for any particular reason, just because we did move around a bit and sometimes it wasn't easy to commute. So I probably did about 3 primary schools and 3 secondary schools. I'm educated up to A level standard. And when I say A level, I mean A level, because I only got the one. And I didn't go to university, so that's where I'm from, Gavan, and that's my education bit in a nutshell. I wasn't particularly, I don't know if academic's the right word, I wasn't particularly motivated when I was at school, and I think as we sort of talked a little bit when we've been together, it was probably slightly different pressure when I went to school, which was a number of years ago, in terms of expectancy on university and that type of stuff may have not been there. So, so West London and educated up to A-level standard.
What was that A-level, just out of interest?
English literature.
Has anyone asked for that A level ever?
I do like reading though, so I guess that bit stuck with me. I like reading books, but no, it hasn't. I'm not aware of it's been any sort of benefit to me subsequently. But then again, there's those things my kids do with maths sometimes. I don't understand it. I think I'm pretty sure I never got asked anything on geometry later in life either, but I guess that's just the way the education system goes sometimes.
Yeah, it must be a difficult one when you know that you might not get asked about this ever again, other than that one exam. It must be difficult to speak to someone who's in the midst of it, in the fire, and say, yeah, just keep going. There's value in it somewhere. That must be a challenge.
Yeah, I guess so. But I said, look, at the time I enjoyed it, so it's fine. I did some books I quite liked, so I didn't mind doing that. Whereas clearly my other subjects were just quite as... didn't quite like my fire enough, or I guess I would have done better in them.
Yeah. What did you want to be when you was younger, Dom?
Do you know what? I'm not sure I ever had a vision. If I've ever had one thing, when I was a kid, I always liked planes, and I probably would have wanted to be an airline pilot, is the truth of it, which probably sounds a bit nerdy to you too, but I used to sort of look up at planes a lot and think it's amazing.
My friend's a pilot, so...
and wonder where they were going and all that type of stuff. So, yeah, the only thing I can ever recall having a not based on anyone else, but purely on my own desires and interests and a thinking I'd like to do was being an airline pilot.
Okay. Well, what we plan on doing is we genuinely plan on getting a pilot on to talk about how you become a pilot.
Yeah.
So I tell you what, I'll make sure that episode gets into your inbox. And if you need our support in changing careers, Dom, we've got you back. We can sort you out.
I'm probably a bit too late now. I also wouldn't be on a plane that I was flying. And as you know, I'm 6'7", and in hindsight, I'm not sure a cockpit would be the most comfortable place for me to work. But that was definitely something. If you said to me, yeah, what was the one thing you sort of, yeah, I could have seen myself. I used to sort of dream a bit like it'd be fantastic, but it never came to pass. So that's life.
Would your younger self be proud or happy of where you are now?
I don't know. I mean, I read that question because you sent it through beforehand. It's a difficult one to answer, I guess. Yeah, I don't see why they wouldn't be. You know, I've done okay. I've been working for 33 years. I've had quite a varied career. Yeah, and it's a great job to have. I'm very lucky to have this job. When you're saying, would it have been something that I would have, you know, dreamed about doing and therefore, you know, looking from a child up to this age, would it have been what I aspired to? Well, no, because I'd have rather been the airline pilot, but the airline pilot didn't come off. So this is the career I've had in retail and buying's been very good to me, and I've been lucky to enjoy it for a number of years.
Okay, so what was your first job?
First career job or job?
First job. Which was the first thing that you did for a week that put money in your pocket at the end of the week?
I was a cleaner.
And how was that?
I quite liked it. So I used to clean an office block after school, 5 evenings a week. And I quite enjoyed it. I was the only, it's funny there, because it was all ladies who worked there. I was the only male, and all the ladies were, in many instances, mums who were doing it for sort of secondary income and everything else for their families and everything else. So it was interesting being the only male, and I was that age, sort of 16 and a half, 17. So they used to sort of look out for me and look after me. And I quite liked being a cleaner. You could sort of come into somewhere and see it was a bit of a mess and it was dirty. And then when you left, it wasn't a mess and it was dirty. So you could see you'd actually had an impact on starting and ending something. But yeah, that was the first job I did in terms of getting paid.
How long have you been in the field? You mentioned is it 33 years you've been working?
Yeah, so I started in M&S in 1988. So I guess it must be coming up, I don't know, 32, 34 years. So I've been in retail and then in buying in this side of things since that period of time. So yeah, certainly over 30 years.
I mean, you mentioned you enjoyed, when you was a cleaner, you enjoyed seeing things from start to finish, from dirty to clean. Is that something that you think has followed you through your career to date?
Yeah, look, when I started off working, I worked in stores and certainly similar sort of thing then. I know it sounds probably a bit mundane, but, you know, you come in the morning on a big food section and half of it's empty and you've had the delivery, and you can see that when you've either done it yourself or organised the team, you know, an hour or so later before the store opens, everything's filled up and ready to go. So, yeah, there's certainly elements of that. In the job that I would do now, some things aren't as instantaneous, they can take a longer time to come to fruition, but yeah, it's the type of job, but ordinarily you can see you know what you've got to do, you can hopefully know how you got to do it, and there's a sense of satisfaction if you achieve it at the other end.
So from starting M&S, how long did it take you to get into the role that you're in now? So obviously 33 years, right? But what was the route of progression?
So when I joined M&S, I joined, they had a scheme that was like a non-grad scheme. So it was called, like a young management trainee scheme. So I did that. And in those days, you had to sort of work your way up through various levels in stores. And then it sounds a bit mundane, but, you know, you start off in a small section, prove yourself, get responsibility for a bigger section or an area. So I did that. I moved around quite a bit. So in 7 years, I lived in 9 different places in the UK, because you used to get, if you were progressing, you got moved around a bit. I was also lucky enough to get seconded and work in Bermuda for a while, but all of that was in sort of a store operation side of things. So I did 7 years working in that type of space, and then was the phrase they would have used, it was identified as somebody who could have potential to move into the office to go into buying. So it was sort of 7 years of sort of doing the store side of things, and then the opportunity was then discussed to me about going into buying. So I guess, yeah, seven years was sort of the groundwork to it, I guess.
Talking about groundwork then, like, do you think it's easier or harder for someone in our generation to move up that pyramid and to make those leaps? So obviously with our careers now, we focus on, you know, doing posts on LinkedIn and trying to build a personal brand. I'm guessing, I don't know, I genuinely don't know, 33 years ago, was a personal brand something that you've been considered?
I don't think it existed 33 years ago. I don't know. I think back then there were a lot more companies that, if you weren't a grad, probably had some structured training programs that could give you a route into a career, and that if you succeeded or performed well, would offer you a structure where you could progress. I'm not sure if there's as much of that around nowadays. Having said that, when you do degrees, you know, all the universities have those sort of contacts into careers and fairs and milk rounds and everything else, so companies get to see people. So it depends what career you're talking about. If you're talking about going into, inverted commas, a structured career in a sort of a corporate environment, it's probably changed. I'll say that when I was leaving school with my 1A level, I was lucky at the time that you could probably be afforded those things more then. I'm not sure that'd be as available to people nowadays. Having said that, there's a lot more graduate stuff today. So when I left school, it wasn't strange that half the people I went to sixth form college with then didn't go on to university. It wasn't considered a good thing or a bad thing. Whereas nowadays, I think a lot more young people will finish college and then consider, you know, going to do a degree or further education, which may then lead them to something else. So I'm not sure it's any, I think it's probably maybe harder if you haven't gone on to further education, and probably a bit harder if you left after school.
I agree with that, yeah.
So one of the routes we see of people trying to develop this personal brand is The Apprentice. I'm just wondering, I'm curious, because I've always watched it and I've thought these people are like, some people put a really good show of themselves on there, right? But other people don't. Yeah. So how would you react as someone who people report into if someone that was reporting into you was on The Apprentice, good or bad? You know, how does that, because I always think it must be a weird scenario to navigate. Like, do you have to just leave your career behind in the hopes that this works, or do you have a career to go back to?
I think it's a comedy show.
Yeah.
I don't know what I think about that. I think, look, if somebody wanted to go and do it, good for them if they saw the opportunity. I'm never quite sure on those type of programs. I'm honest with Kavan about whether you see the real person or whether those TV programs sort of, you know, they work to a degree on creating things that are interesting that people are going to tune in to watch. I'm never quite sure whether you're seeing the real person on the program or whether they've been put in a situation that's made them behave in a certain way. But and I don't know, I was reading something about a reality show in the paper the other day. I think it's the anniversary of one of them. And, you know, there was, seemed to be a chunk of people who'd gone on and then had been lucky enough that that had morphed into something else for them later on. And then there were plenty of other people who'd been on it and nothing had ever come of it. So yeah. I think there's probably a bit more of a culture nowadays that people might think that type of thing would be good for their personal brand, if you want to call it that way, but I'm not entirely sure. Funnily enough, one of the guys that used to be a customer of mine in Booker, he was one of the people who was on one of the early series of Big Brother, and he's now got a catering business. So I don't know if it'd be good or bad, and as I say, I'm not entirely sure it's the route to what some people may perceive it to be. I also guess there must be hundreds of people who apply to go on there who don't get selected, right? So they must be looking for people who are going to provoke people and be interested enough to watch them.
That's a good point.
Yeah. What's the good and what's the good and the bad about the role and the industry as a whole?
Well, look, I think as an industry, it's incredibly important, right? Because, you know, without stating the obvious on it, everybody needs to buy food and drink. So you're providing a service for the nation. It does employs, you know, a lot of people directly or indirectly. It's a fast moving environment. People are normally interacting with the food business, be it a Tesco or a, you know, another fast food provider or, you know, a coffee outlet. People are in those outlets sort of, you know, 5, 6, 7 days a week. So it's fast moving. It provides employment. And look, you know, during lockdown was a good example where, you know, everything else, a lot of things were closed, weren't they, in terms of pubs and cafes and places like that. But, you know, the, all the retailers traded and meant that people could keep eating and drinking and being looked after. So, yeah, it's an important part of society in that respect, I guess.
OK, so for you personally, what are the benefits of working at Tesco?
For me personally, well, it's a big organisation with some really talented people. So I'm lucky that I've got a really talented team of people that I get to work with. And that means that there's people there that can challenge the way you think about things, as well as, you know, you challenging around the other way around. It's a dynamic environment. You know, fresh food is quite fast moving. And so, you know, I've always enjoyed working, you know, when I was in M&S, I looked after the clothing side of the business for a while as well. Was, you know, the fashion industry is interesting, but what I've always liked about fresh food is, you know, things can happen very quickly. It's quite dynamic. And if you get something wrong, you can put it right quite quickly. So I've enjoyed that. I enjoyed working around with people. I'm lucky that, I guess, the role allows me to see lots of different parts of the food industry. So this morning I was meeting somebody who works for a fruit and veg business. Yesterday I was having a meeting about dairy and bakery. So you get to see all the different industries that form the supply chain into the food industry and what you guys would go out and buy. And I quite enjoy that variety of it as well. So that's another benefit of the role that I have.
I mean, first of all, you must get hungry during meetings. That's all that came to my mind. When you're talking about dairy, bakery, it must get the metabolism going.
No, you'd be surprised. It doesn't really. Although, you know, sometimes we will do sessions where we go and eat a new range of products or look at a new range of products. But then again, you can do that at strange times of the day, right? So last Thursday, I had a supplier in and they were presenting a new range of potential ready meals to us. So I was eating a curry at 9:15 in the morning. So it's, yeah, it's not always as you think. Sometimes you're eating something, well, this is a fantastic curry, but I'm not sure I'd have it for breakfast. So, you know, the diary doesn't work out that you get the food in when you fancy it sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, look, it's great. You do get to see a lot of new and interesting and innovative products.
So being transactional then, with my role, for instance, working at a university, we can sometimes, I'll claim it myself, I can sometimes skirt student discount offers, yeah? So because I have a university login, I can say I'm a student. I don't pay full price for YouTube Music, so if anyone from Google's listening to me, please don't revoke that. I really enjoy that privilege. But for you, what is it, like 10%? Off Tesco, 20% off Tesco. What are those sorts of benefits as well? Just in case someone's interested.
All Tesco colleagues would get 10% staff colleague discount.
That's not bad. Yeah, a weekly shop.
I think Morrison do 15.
Morrison do 15.
I think all the retailers do. I think pretty much, I don't know, I suspect every sort of major employer, I mean, I don't know, if you work for British Airways, I guess if they give you discounted flights, if you work for, you know, Greggs, they probably give you, it's a very nice perk to have, but also it means that obviously all our colleagues, hopefully, therefore, will also shop in Tesco and they can look at the products we sell and give us feedback on the products as well. But yeah, no, I get 10% off the Tesco shop when I go and do it.
Yeah. How's a day in your life? What's your work-life balance?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I did talk to Kavan about this a little bit before. So obviously, mostly my working life is, you know, Monday through Friday. So I tend to leave the house at about 10 to 6 in the morning. I'll get home 7:30 most evenings. During the week, it's very varied. I can have some days which could be office-based and quite a lot of meetings. There's other days like today, you know, so I've been into London to meet someone. Just before I got on the phone to you guys, I did a conference call with some of the team on something. When I finish with you guys, I've got another meeting and I'm going to go to a branch and do a store visit this afternoon. So it's normally Monday through Friday, but quite long days. And at weekends, obviously, I am contactable or contact the team if there's an issue or something comes up. And I would tend to sort of read through emails Saturday, Sunday. And also I would tend to look at, you're always, I think we talked to Kavan before about, you know, you're always quite aware of things that are going on, which may affect the food industry. So you're always a bit alert to, you know, when you hear something happening on, you know, channel tunnel delays or something else, you sort of tend to think, okay, what's the implication for me? But, you know, I'm lucky, you know, I don't ordinarily have to go into work or anything else at weekends. So I get weekends back, although I would look at emails and keep in touch with stuff.
So you mentioned the long days. When's the last time you had a 9-to-5 week? I'm just curious, in your career, when's the last time you had a 9-to-5 week?
Well, literally 9-to-5.
Yeah, like a 37-hour week or 40-hour week then. Yeah, when's the last time you had a 40-hour week?
I've never had a 40-hour week in 33 years.
So is it the industry or is it your work ethic or is it both?
I think it's probably the industry. You know, when I was at M&S or other places, in my opinion, food businesses are sort of normally quite early start things. You know, you think about the people who are delivering your food. There's lorries getting driven around all through the night to get to supermarkets and wholesalers and cafes and bars and everything else to deliver goods. I've never really found, I don't find sort of it being a long, it's the norm for me. And when I would have worked in a store as a manager, you would get in there, you know, if I was working in the food section, M&S, I'd get in there, I don't know, 6:30 in the morning, you get it ready for opening by 8 o'clock, and you might still be there at 6 o'clock in the evening. So I guess the nature of retail or wholesale is normally maybe a bit longer days, but also don't forget in retail or wholesale, a lot of colleagues will work Saturdays and Sundays because our stores and things are open. So it's normally quite a bit of a longer week. But then again, I think it's probably a lot of, I don't know, does the traditional 9-to-5 still is, I don't know if it still exists in a lot of industries.
Are you maybe a 9-to-5 fan?
No.
Not really, no.
Today I'm not doing 9-to-5, no. No. How do you manage that then? I mean, do you ever get like, I don't know, what I'm trying to get at is, do you ever get like FOMO, fear of missing out? Do you, like, how do you manage such busy weeks? Do you prioritize rest on the weekend? Do you prioritize socializing on the weekend? How does that work?
I don't have any FOMO. I'm probably too old for FOMO now. I tend to, I've got to be honest with you, during my week, a lot of my life is quite structured, right? I'm in meetings or I'm presenting things or I know I've got to do a target or I've got to be somewhere to see someone or you know, even like coming to speak to you guys, I know that right, that's going to be on at that time there. I need to finish one thing, get onto another. So Monday through Friday, where my life is quite structured, although enjoyable and varied, but it is quite structured, right? So weekends, I've got to be honest with you, if I can do, I prefer not to have anything particularly structured in my diary, which my wife doesn't always like. But so I find downtime, I don't necessarily have to do stuff to particularly, you know, feel like I've had a break. I sometimes just look quite like I have, like, it's quite nice for the next 3 hours, you know, on a Saturday. I don't have to be anywhere. I'm not expected to turn up at something. I'm not waiting for a phone call. So, yeah, I tend to do that. I wouldn't say, if you're looking for me, say, do I do something exciting at the weekends to break the working week? That's not the case. I tend to sort of take it easy. I'm lucky I've got two young kids, so sometimes they'll want to spend a bit of time when we're going to do stuff with them or whatever else. So, but you do, I mean, the sort of working week I've talked about, you sort of get used to have been doing it for a long time. And if I wasn't doing it, actually, it feels a bit strange.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes I have a day off. If I have a day off and I'm not away on holiday, those days feel a bit strange to me because it's a bit, hold on, I'd normally be doing stuff, and you tend to look at your watch and think, oh, this time I'd be doing that, or that time I'd be doing that. So I don't know, you just get kind of used to that way of working and thinking after a while. It's not like it's a hardship.
Yeah, I was going to say, how does it work? If you take a week off, Do you have cover? Do you come back to a lot of things to do? How does it work? Because as your director, you got a lot of things on.
Yes, I think the key to it and making it work is that obviously in the build-up to you being off, you try and make sure most things are closed down or covered off. I'm lucky enough that I'd always get one of the team would cover me and go to quite a few of the meetings. I would tend to keep my phone with me, so if I was needed, I could be contacted. And I would tend to go through my emails at least an hour a day while I wasn't there to make sure that I wasn't, if there was anything that I thought needed my input, I was aware of, or if there's anything happening that I could get involved in it. So, but yeah, clearly I wouldn't be in the regular meetings and stuff like that, but I would keep in touch and I'd be aware that what was going on.
Okay. So we've spoken a lot about your career, how you got there, how it is day to day. What's the end goal for you, Dom? I know that the more you move up, the more responsibility you have. Arguably 60-hour weeks go to 80-hour weeks, they go to 90-hour weeks. What's the end goal? What do you want out of your career? Because you say you're too old for FOMO, but you're not at retirement age yet. You've still got a few years left, I'm sure.
A few years left. I don't know. Look, I'm not just saying it, but I'm lucky to have the chance to do the role I've got now. I enjoy the food industry. I like the variety of my job. I like this week. You know, I've been with different teams of people talking about different things and how we can make things better and do things in a different way. So I like doing that. Do you know, I've got to be honest, like we talked about it before. You know, I've never really had a sort of a particular career goal in mind. I've been lucky, and I think a lot of people's working life does come down to luck. I've been lucky that I've done all right. I've been considered to sort of be moderately competent and be given different things to do. But, you know, if you're saying to me, what's my next job after this, I'll be very happy doing this for the next few years. I haven't got any big plans to do something else. I've got a very big job as it is, and I'm pleased to be able to do it.
When do you think you'll retire then?
When will I retire?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always thought if I could do, I wouldn't want to work past sort of 60. But look, a lot of things come into play then, don't they? Can you afford to do it and all the rest of it? But if I can do, I wouldn't. I'm 54 this year and I've never really had a desire. I used to think I'd sort of be retired at 55, 56, but I might have to do a few more years yet. I don't know. But partly because there's a little bit, if you go back to that bit a minute ago, I quite like all the leaving the house at 10 to 6, the long days, the busy weeks, the diaries, looking at the emails, thinking about the industry. But I guess I've also done that with a view that actually really immerse yourself in it now and do it all now. And then at some point, when you stop, you stop.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of hours to fill in a week, isn't it? If you retire, what do you do?
I don't know.
Yeah. Stay tuned for part two. In 6 years, when Dom's retired, we'll get him back on.
I have no idea what I'll do. No, I'll have to think of something. I don't know. But yeah.
If you want to sponsor a podcast full time, Dom, you've got my email. all right, so maybe I'm putting you in a little bit of hot water with Tesco by asking this question, right? But you must shop at other supermarkets from time to time. Maybe, I don't know, you're in a rush and you need some bread and Morrison's is down the road, or other supermarkets are available too. Have you ever seen something that's better in another supermarket or wholesaler, and has that impacted your work at Tesco or Booker? So what I'm getting at is, what's your capacity to make change in your role? Like, could you say Morrison's had a really great fresh fruit display, I want to put that in all stores by this time next month, let's make it happen?
But the absolute truth is, if you're doing my job, you wouldn't be doing it properly if you weren't going and visiting all of the competition all of the time to see what they're doing that's good, bad or indifferent. So yesterday I was in two big Tesco's, and also I went to another retailer had opened a new concept store, and I will go around to today. When I got my coffee, when I went to Central London, I specifically went to one particular outlet to see what they were doing on some of their pastry offer. So the truth is, guys, without being if you're trying to get it from an angle about, you know, I will go around everybody and look at different people all the time with a view of actually how does ours stack up against them, who's doing something new and different. The same way, to be honest, when I go out for a meal, I probably look at stuff on the menu and think, well, this is innovative and different. So that was the good thing about when I worked for Booker. You know, quite a lot of the time you're dealing with caterers, and some of those guys can be quite innovative and trying different stuff to keep that, to give themselves a competitive edge, right? So yeah, to answer your question, I go to every single retailer, and I go to all of the people that I view as competition in terms of food to go and cafes and everything else. And so a lot of the time I see stuff and I think actually we're do a better job than them, and other times see stuff that actually is probably something to learn from that. But that's also the nature of the food industry. There's always somebody doing something interesting, different, right? And even when it comes down to, I mean, you guys are talking about The Apprentice, but if you think about the other things that exploded on telly, particularly in the last 10 or 15 years, right, it's cookery programs and and so there's always stuff going on food. And the truth is everybody's out there looking at it and thinking, well, is there something in the way that's been done that could be applied here or looked at? So I shop everywhere as much with a professional head on as a personal head on.
If anyone's interested in being a director in a large organisation, just listen back to the last 2 minutes because that was a perfect answer.
I know, I didn't hear no other supermarket.
Yeah. Dom named no other supermarket, but he said with conviction that, you know what, it's part of the role. And it was a fantastic answer, so thanks, Dom. But just to follow on the follow-up, what's your capacity to change, to make change within Tesco if you did see something better that you felt needed to be changed in Tesco? Could you make it happen in a short space of time? Because the way I'm thinking of it is, in my role, if I had to make something change, there's a lot of people above me to get it passed by. What's it like for you?
I could make it change, yeah, definitely. So if you saw that we weren't doing something right, or it could be done better, or there was an issue with something, you know, let's be candid about it. Part of my role is therefore gets paid to what you're going to do to put it right. And that, but that can be something not exciting, right? It can be like an availability of a product. So if you've got a challenge on availability, you can't just sit there and say, okay, well, I'm going to have 50% of what I need. You then have to come up with, if I can't get it here, is there someone else? What are the other supply routes on it? So yeah, the job is, a lot of the role is about how are you going to change things, do things differently, look at things differently. The nature of a big organization is you might not necessarily be able to do it overnight, but as I said to you before, what I like about food is you can do it in a relatively short space of time compared to, say, I don't know, you know, working in a, doing phones or something. I don't know how long it takes to develop a new iPhone or something, whereas in the food retail world, you should be able to sort it out relatively quickly. So yeah, it's quite dynamic, and yes, we could make a change if we needed to.
That's fascinating. I think that capacity or that propensity to change is what makes your job exciting, and what makes it fulfilling as well. To feel like you're able to impact change is really, really important. I feel, anyway, for me personally, I wouldn't want to be in a role where I couldn't impact some level of urgent change if I felt it was necessary. And I think it's quite fascinating to see that is possible. Okay. So you and I met via a program called Arrival Education, Tesco Business Leaders. And Tesco has about 300,000 employees. So I suppose I'm asking you, what is Tesco doing to impact and influence the UK for the better? And you can obviously link to Arrival Education within that and just get your thoughts on what Arrival has been for you.
Yeah, well, actually, funnily enough, I had a call yesterday with Emily from Arrival, which was sort of, I think, almost like a formal sign off from their side of things. And she was talking through what the impact was. And, you know, I think it was a really good program, Kavan. I think, you know, I said to you before, I think I personally was lucky that I got paired with you.
Yes.
It was, I guess, a safe space, if you want to call it that, to talk about some things. You know, you and I had some very direct conversations and insights into how different things work. I think it does a good piece of work in terms of getting people to think about D&I more and making it more front of mind. I think it also shines a bit of a light on what could be the challenges to, you know, diverse talent getting on. So, yeah, we were lucky to get together through that programme, and I'm grateful I was afforded the opportunity to join it. And I thought it was a good programme, and I thought that the closing event that we did the other week was a good event. It was interesting as well to listen to how the other people involved in it were. And I don't say mentor and mentee, because the whole thing about that program was meant to be reciprocal, right? So yeah. I thought that was a good event. In terms of Tesco, look, it's a sizable employer, isn't it? And you know, anybody who's employing 300,000 people, you know, has to provide good working for conditions for people, good career opportunities for people, interesting roles to do. So it's a good business, but definitely in terms of things like the D&I work that we would have talked about, particularly at that event you and I attended, you know, you could see at a very senior level, it was important to Tesco as an organisation.
Definitely. And I think to get across some of my observations from the mentoring programme, Tesco is really progressive when it comes to putting their time, money and effort into D&I. That's one thing I noticed right away. They're not just there for the show. They're putting their money where their mouth is, so to speak. So I think that's really quite impressive. Also, Dom taught me a few things that I now carry into my day-to-day life. So, for instance, at an event, at a public event, and take this from me, it's genuinely a useful piece of advice here. Don't get messy food. Get food that is easy to eat. Because since then, Dom told me that, right? And I've been at a restaurant, I went to a work lunch the other day, and I almost ordered the lamb chops. But the way I eat lamb chops here is hand. So I had to think, you know what, let me not just get my hands all dirty in this work. Yeah.
I was going to ask the question when you're trying to eat yourself through some sort of difficult sandwich to swallow or something. So, yeah, I always go conservative choice on a food at an event if there's more people there or you might be asked to do something, that's for sure.
Exactly that. And one of the other things as well is always be cheerful, because it's hard to be angry or frustrated at a cheerful person. So
I was lucky enough to go to a presentation by somebody years ago, and they were asked for business advice. His advice was, always be cheerful, because it's hard to tell off a cheerful person. And I don't know, it sort of resonated with me, and to a degree, there's a bit of truth in it if you think about it. So it's probably not bad advice.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. And I mean, you know what, those are the things. And also, to broach the conversation, one of the most things that I found most value about this was, look, like I said, Dom is the director of commercial director of fresh food and commodities. Is that right?
Yeah.
In what world, realistically, would I be sat here talking to Dom without a program like that? But from the experiences of chatting to Dom, he's not an alien. Yeah. He does choose food that isn't messy. Yeah. Those little things, he's probably too big to fit in a plane. He's human. He's human like you and I, right? So these are the things that makes that gap a lot smaller. And actually, being able to have someone like Dom on the other end of a phone to ask for advice or to ask for to partake in your podcast is a fantastic resource to have. So for that program and for Dom personally, I'm appreciative. So thank you. One last thing I wanted to pick up on from the arrival program is I noticed one thing about you and the way you think. And you alluded to it a little bit earlier here as well, about your retail lens and the way you see current events going on in the world and how they will impact retail. So let me pick one or two. So you mentioned about container prices during COVID, but also the implication of container prices during COVID going up was that we started to buy more British sort of takeaway tubs and those sorts of things, because the price of a container shipping those things over from another place was too much, and we started producing it in Britain to reduce the price. Could you speak to a bit more about that?
Takeaway raw material and packaging was, if you think about it, if a container costs you X and it costs 10 times X, everything that goes in the container goes up. And also with some of the delays on that shipping, it's meant that people have had to think about sourcing it closer to home to make sure that they can keep continuous supply. But that goes back to what we talked about earlier on. Yeah, everything that's happening all the time, yeah, a lot of things will impact the food industry, and therefore you're having to react to what are the different solutions to get yourself through. But that can even be things like in recent weeks, Gavon, there's been a lot of lettuce and things that this time of year actually gets grown in Spain. And we won't start the UK season for a while, but about 4 weeks ago, they had a really lot of rainfall, quite unusual for them. So you then get sort of 3 or 4 weeks where you've got challenges on product coming out of Spain, and you have to think about, right, what the different issues are getting up. So there's always something happening which can impact it. It can be something economic, like the cost of a sea container, or it could be something, you know, weather related, like rain and inability to harvest. So there's always something going on you have to think about and respond to.
Do you have a soundboard for that, or does work take up enough of your time to soundboard that sort of stuff? Because I know I work in a niche market, shall we say, and sometimes I'm talking to someone about work and they're like, or Rachel's an accountant, so I imagine he gets a lot more of the not interested, mate, sort of comments, right? So how do you soundboard those things? Like, oh, that means that this, like, who listens to you when you have those things just on your mind?
No one at home, mate, that's for sure. That was the closer that gets to that, I went into Tesco with Freddie the other day, my son who's 12, and when we left he said, how come the lady on the till doesn't know you? So I don't work in this shop, Freddie. And I had to explain to me, he thought I worked in the shop around the corner. They're not interested in any of that type of stuff. You tend to sort of think it yourself and talk to people at work because they're probably interested in it as well, but no normal person would be interested. Yeah. So yeah, it's just what it is.
Just to go back a little bit, during your career, did you have a mentor yourself? Someone you look up to or helped you become a director?
Not really that stuck with me. I would say that there was, at various points in my career, there were people I was lucky enough to work for who had an impact on me. Actually, funny enough, one of the people way back when, who wasn't actually a brilliant boss and he wasn't a mentor to me, but he did say something to me one day, which did sort of stick a little bit. It's basically when you work for different people, A, you've got to be yourself, right? But if you're yourself forever, nothing changes. So you've got to be true to yourself. But he used to say a little bit like, when you work for someone, if you see them doing something you think is really good and impactful, steal it. And if you think they're doing something which isn't very helpful, just don't copy it. And it sort of stuck in my mind a little bit. So did I end up with one person who looked after me? No. But almost everybody I've then either worked for or with, I have looked at and thought, actually, the way they go about that's bit better than I do, or the way they think about that's a bit better than I do. So I've tried to probably be a bit like a magpie and take things, good things off different people as I've gone along.
I tried that at school, got screwed. I'm joking, but that's a great piece of advice. I think it's right, because there's no need to reinvent the wheel. There is no need to reinvent the wheel. If someone's doing something good, do it as well. Copy them.
Different things do things, but also it doesn't have to be your boss, right? You could be working someone in your team, Kevin, who's better at doing something than you are. So yeah, and actually I've sometimes learned as much off peers as I would say somebody I report to in terms of how they've gone about things or how they think about things and how they respond to it. So I try and be open-minded.
What's your natural talent, Dom? So like, what is the thing that you don't need to work so hard on? Or is this all a product of consistency and hard work and luck and all those sorts of things?
I don't think I have any natural talent personally, but I think I'm lucky enough to work in an industry which is quite reactive, and that if you're reacting and responding to it, thinking it through, you get lots of opportunities each day to do stuff or correct it or respond to it. So I wouldn't say I'm any great strategic thinker or anything like that. Or if you're looking for a particular skill, I wouldn't say I necessarily have them. I think you sort of be able, you've got to be able to get on with people to a degree. You've got to be able to articulate why you think something. There's definitely, the world doesn't work in terms of saying, oh, I'm the boss to do this. The world doesn't work like that anymore. So you have to try and build a reason why you would want to get people to do it. I think, to be honest with you, I've just had a lot. I've talked about it several times when we've been together. I've been very lucky that I've had a good career, which fortunately I've obviously showed some competence in. And, having done it for a number of years, if you say, what's my skill? I'd say I've got a lot of experience of doing it, which is probably a rubbish answer for what you're looking at. But when you've done it, when you've done something enough, you sort of unconsciously think, actually, if I do that, that could happen. If I do that, that could happen. It builds up in layers eventually, I guess.
Yeah.
What skill do you admire in another leader?
I think a skill that a lot of people don't realise that the best leaders have when they get to a senior position, and I'm not counting myself in this space, but is resilience. And I don't think people always appreciate that the people at the very top of things, they've got it incoming from a lot of different angles, in terms of the pressure of their role, the pressure of people report to them, the pressure of people who may be in their care. And it's an interesting thing. I've seen a lot of I've been lucky to work for all sorts of leaders and everything else, but actually resilience is quite an interesting, not skill set, but an attribute that you see some people have, and it's quite interesting how people can deal with different challenges, pressures, things going well, things going badly over a protracted period of time. So it's not something I would say I'm knee deep in, but I've been very impressed by certain people I've worked for or seen. I thought actually they're very resilient individuals.
Great point. Dom, from getting to know you, I get the sense that you're very introspective. So I suppose I'm asking you to be a little bit vulnerable now. And what are your limits? So for me, for instance, I couldn't be a runner, right? If running was to save my life I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. But I know I could do most other things that I put my mind to, but running's just not it. What are your limits?
I don't know. I'm not good at running either. I don't know. I can't really think of anything. I definitely couldn't do this. If you talk about reality programs, everything else for a minute, there's no way you'd get me down doing any of that in the jungle stuff or any of that. There's no way God's green earth I'd do that, even if involved. It's like, no, thanks, you. I'm not bothering with it. I always look at those people and think, God, they must be so desperate to do that. So, yeah, I don't think I could do that.
OK. Last few questions from us then. Could you go it alone? So look, I see someone like you in the same bracket as an actual business, like a business leader, entrepreneur. I see directors and yourself in that same bracket. So we've got a pitch for you. Aki and Saltfish presents. Your name's Dom Morrie. So maybe Morrisons.
Yeah.
That's our pitch. Supermarket, Morrisons.
Yeah, I'm doing
it. Can it work? Okay.
Well, yeah. You go and do the dragons then, will you? It's not going to last. So I saw that question. Could I go and do something myself? No.
Cool.
I think for people who are, I was lucky enough when I was a booker to work with a lot of customers who were entrepreneurs and who do things for themselves. And it's a very different skill set that people need to have. I think resilience, because, you know, they're responsible for everything from is the cafe making any money? Have the staff turned up? Have they got any goods? Are the customers coming in? I don't know. I've never had to go and do it. I think I work in an environment quite well when there's a structure and team of people around me to operate. I've never worked in an environment when it's all down to me and making it happen. Normally, in my experience, a lot of the people I've met, mainly through booker or customers in that space, they've been doing it for a number of years. It's almost like, you know, I started off a lot. We talked about when I joined M&S, I did an M&S. And they were sort of followed that path up. But a lot of the people when you speak to who are people who are, got cafes or pubs or some hotels or some chain of takeaways, they've almost invariably, most of the ones I've met and who do it really well, almost have been doing that since they finished uni or finished school. And it's something they've grown up with and they're very comfortable with. And also conversely, if you say to them, okay, if you're now running, I saw a customer the other week and he's got three cafes in West London which are doing really well. And he's a certain type of personality and he's very clever and he's very bright and he's a very capable business person. But if you said, okay, would you give that up and go and work in Tesco? He wouldn't want to do it because he likes that space. So if you're asking me, could I go and be an entrepreneur and start something up? I think I would probably not be very good at it.
Okay.
Any advice you would give someone that wants to be high up like yourself in the organization? What advice would you give to them?
And just to make the question a little bit more challenging, 10-second answer.
I said to you before, Caban, I think a lot of things in life are luck, and it's how you play the luck that comes your way, and that can be good luck and bad luck. And I would also say that people quite often have a view that the grass is always greener, and I think in a lot of times in life, if you're doing something you really enjoy, then always craving to be more senior isn't necessarily the right thing. So I think you've got to do something you really enjoy, and if luck comes your way and you're good and you progress, that's another matter. But just aspiring to be senior for the sake of it might not always bring happiness.
Brilliant answer, thank you.